Hi everyone, it's Cynthia Dearen here. I am super excited to let you know that throughout the month of March, to coincide with International Women's Day, we're launching the Girls Go Global campaign. And we're going to be awarding a full scholarship to the International Business Accelerator to one lucky female entrepreneur. I created the IBA to help micro to medium-sized businesses to speed up and de-risk the process of taking a company international. And along the way, I've realized that there are not very many women on the international business scene, given the number of companies that are out there. And I don't think that's right. So I'm on a mission to change it. What we're going to be doing is awarding one female business owner a full scholarship to the program to give her all the tools she needs to make her business an international success. We'll also follow her journey and let you know how she goes. To celebrate the competition and to help spread the word, I'll be interviewing a very successful female entrepreneur every week throughout the month of March on the Business Beyond Borders podcast. My guests will be sharing their insights about the highs and lows of taking a business international, and we'll be talking about the challenges that they faced that their male counterparts didn't have to deal with. We'll also be talking about where they get their inspiration from and their top tips for success. My guest today is Gemma Manning, who is the Managing Director of strategic communications firm Manning & Co. Manning & Co has offices in Sydney and Singapore and also runs an international personalized and highly focused market accelerator, Gemstar, which is based in Singapore and has a growing presence in other Asian markets as well. Gemma and I had a wide-ranging conversation which covered a whole range of things. Pineapple tarts, Gemma's experience of working in Japan as an 18-year-old gaijin, and how she started her own company with a one-year-old in tow. We also talked about the particular challenges of doing business internationally as a woman, and Gemma was kind enough to share some of her top tips for success with me. Now, Gemma is such an engaging and energetic storyteller and a really, really determined person. She was fascinating to interview, and I know that you're going to love this episode of the podcast. Gemma, it's great to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much for joining me from Singapore.
Cynthia, thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be chatting with you today. It's a real pleasure.
So I thought we might just start with a bit of context. As I said, we're chatting and you're in Singapore, I'm in Sydney. And the weekend that we've just had, people all around the world celebrated Lunar New Year. What does that look like in Singapore?
Yeah, it's amazing, actually. Having been in and out of Singapore for the last 5 years doing business here, it's the actual first time I've been here in Singapore throughout the Chinese New Year break. And I've experienced it from having lived in Sydney and kind of have an understanding of it, but it's very a different experience to actually be here through this period from a business side of things. I got to see what happens in business. So, for example, to show that I'm very much immersed here in the local business ecosystem, I celebrated Chinese New Year with my clients. I made sure I hand-delivered them goodies. There's a lot of different Chinese New Year treats that are part of the custom and tradition here of celebrating Chinese New Year. So these kind of things I never really understood or knew about in too much detail before living here. And my team are local Singaporeans who celebrate, you know, Chinese New Year. So I had a lot of insights from them as to, you know, Gemma, buy these pineapple tarts because pineapples represent this, and buy this, and let's do this. So it was a very different experience for me living here and experiencing it. The weekend was really quiet as well. So Chinese New Year's Eve was on the Thursday, and then Friday was Chinese New Year's Day, and then it was the weekend, and it was dead here in Singapore. A lot of people go out of Singapore and travel to see their families. So it was a very interesting weekend just hanging here in Singapore. Even it's very quiet today all around because our office is just on the fringe of the CBD, and a lot of offices are still closed today. So we're kind of still into that New Year period, but it was really very, very interesting to be here. It was a great celebration.
So can I just skip back to what you said about pineapple tarts for a second? What do they actually mean? And why should you buy them?
They're a real delicacy, and they're very tasty. I actually bought some for home as well, and my girls and I have been getting through them. They're very, very yummy. Pineapple, the word pineapple in Chinese is, I can't remember what it actually, what it sounds like, but it is to do with an auspicious kind of trait, or so that's where they recognize pineapple, given it sounds close to this word in Chinese, that you'll see. It's not just the pineapple tarts. There are big pineapples everywhere on display here in terms of decorations, and it's a real big thing. So even outside our office here, there are these big pineapples hung outside to bring good luck. So it's very auspicious. Yeah, very, very interesting. I never, that was a new thing for me. I knew always mandarins and oranges. That's also an auspicious kind of reference here, but the pineapple tarts are something very interesting. So I hand delivered all these pineapple tarts to my clients.
That is totally, I had no idea about that. So that is truly fascinating. Yeah. Tell me, did you always want to be an international businesswoman?
Do you know, I didn't set out to be an international businesswoman. Although when I reflect back on my journey, even to my childhood and things that I was very interested in, I guess it's no surprise that I've ended up here. If you were to speak to my family or close friends, it's not a surprise that I'm here doing business, and I have developed or grown an international business now. I've always loved travel, and I've always loved Asia. I've grown up around business. My own mum was in business, so I was exposed to business very, very early from an eight-year-old type thing. So I guess if you look at business always being in my blood, in my DNA, a love for travel and new experiences and learning new languages and broadening my own horizons, it was probably only going to be a matter of time before in my business life that I wanted to experience that in my business life and bring it all together. And I think where I'm at is, yeah, it's been this a big journey, but I'm obviously following my passions and doing what I love. And so being an international businesswoman, I do get to travel. I do get to experience these countries that I absolutely love. I love learning business culture in the countries I travel to, as well as, you know, the country itself and food and customs and traditions and really embracing everything that I experience. I never thought I could do it, given that I'm a mother with two children. I never thought I could do it on my own, but I am, and I'm delighted to have created a career path for myself that brings all of that together.
And I am really, I'm really keen to come back and to dig into that and to really hear your thoughts on, you know, how you go about creating an international business as a mother raising young kids. Before we get there, I want to focus on the past first. Now, when I was doing some research for our interview, I noticed on your LinkedIn profile that you studied marketing and Japanese at the University of New South Wales. And I was wondering what made you choose Japanese and whether you think that influenced the path that you chose later on.
Yeah. Why Japanese? Maybe I'll start there. I mentioned earlier that I grew up around business. And so as an eight-year-old, we moved from Sydney to Cairns. With my mum and my stepfather, and we moved to Cairns so we could start a fish farm. So that was the kind of first business that I was exposed to. Fish farm, well, it was the 80s, and growing fish, tropical fish and marine fish, it was a big booming business in Australia. So there was a reason we moved to Cairns for that business. So I grew up on this fish farm in Cairns during those years. And living in Cairns, it was during the 80s where, I'm showing my age here, but it was when there was an influx of Japanese tourists to Queensland. Japanese business people were buying into Queensland and golf courses and all sorts of hotels. And it was the real boom in Queensland, at least. So given that I lived in Cairns for those years, I studied Japanese at my school. And I was exposed then to, you know, we had a sister school in Japan, you know, exchange programs. I absolutely fell in love with the language. I loved learning the Japanese language as an eight-year-old from 8 to 12 to 13, roughly, in Cairns. When I moved back to Sydney with my family, I really missed the language, actually. So, and the language wasn't taught at my school, either my primary school or my high school that I went back into. So I decided to study it via Saturday school. So every Saturday I would go and learn the language. So that's a lot of commitment and dedication, because all my other friends were having the Saturdays off, but I was spending a good half my day at Saturday school studying the language and keeping it up. I studied it for my HSC, and I felt like I'd been so committed to the language and I loved it so much. I set myself, you'll probably get to know a little bit about me, I'm very goal orientated and fairly determined about what I want to achieve. So I made up my mind to go to Japan at the beginning of year 12. I said to myself, I'm going to go and live in Japan next year. And so that's kind of how I got to live in Japan. I did go and live in Japan for a year as an 18-year-old. So as all of my friends were, you know, getting ready to start university, I was one of the few who took a gap year. I remember at the time, I mean, it's more common now, but back then I think I was kind of bucking the trend a little bit. I was doing something a bit different to everyone else. And it was hard. I was only 18, got on a plane after my final exams, flew over there on my own. And that, I lived there for the year, embraced everything that I could over there.
What was it like as a white 18-year-old woman pitching up in Japan alone?
It was a fairly interesting time, I guess. It was quite hard at first. I had a lot of homesickness. I went to work in a hotel that was south of Tokyo. So I lived on this little island. It was tiny, tiny, tiny island off Atami and the coast there. So it was about an hour south of Tokyo. I was fairly isolated. So I was the only gaijin, which means foreigner, on the island that I worked. And there were some tricky times, because there were a lot of businessmen from Toyota or Mitsubishi or, you know, the big Japanese companies that would come to this island for their business conferences. And I definitely realized I was out on my own, and that nobody was there to protect me, in that even my employer, I was the gaijin girl who would go and greet all the guests, speak in Japanese, take them to customer service for check-in. And there were some experiences that I just remember going, challenged by some, in that, you know, it was definitely an awakening that, oh my gosh, I'm an 18-year-old, but I am in this foreign country. And yeah, there were those experiences that I had to kind of come up against, that were, yeah, I had to kind of teach myself some survival skills and be pretty resilient. And it was, yeah, an interesting time.
So do you get to use your Japanese much now?
Not as much as, actually, it's funny, in Singapore, there's quite a big Japanese community. So I actually do find myself speaking Japanese a bit more here than I did in the lead up to leaving Sydney and moving over here. But Japanese, because I'd studied so hard for the language, lived there, experienced all of that. When I moved back to Sydney, I studied Japanese at uni, and that's where I guess this question started. I was wanted to do a double degree with the communications aspect as well as Japanese. And then all my jobs were Japanese speaking jobs up until starting my own business. Every job up until then I was speaking Japanese in those positions.
And so how long was that period of time? You graduated from university, and then you went to the corporate sector before you started it out on your own. How long was that period of time? Just tell me a bit about what that was like.
Yeah, I think it was about 4 or 5 years before I started out on my own. I loved kind of getting into the corporate scene. I was meant to do a 5-year international comms degree with Japanese, but I just couldn't do the 5 years after already living in Japan for a year. So that's why I decided to do the New South Wales degree. I was quite keen to get out of uni, to be honest. I've always worked as well. So I've always had part-time positions, even from a 12, 14-year-old. For me, working's been in my DNA as well. So I was quite keen to get into the workforce, and I was very lucky to have, well, I shouldn't say lucky, actually. My first corporate job was with a company called Covance, and I was going for the marketing assistant role. And the person who interviewed me, I was a Japanese speaking marketing assistant role. And I was put through, you know, very rigorous tests in terms of my Japanese writing, speaking tests, did all of that. And the person who was hiring me said to me, you know, Gemma, we're quite impressed with what you've achieved. I think I was 20, 21, 22 at the time. So they actually created a new role for me, which was not the assistant role. So they filled that role with somebody else. And they created a next level up role for me. And I will never forget the person who hired me. So I'm still linked in with him, and he really gave me an accelerated start, if you like, into my corporate career. My corporate career was very accelerated. I was very young, but I think that my mentors and the people that hired me and I worked with could see potential, and that I was put my head down. I did always work incredibly hard, but I was never scared of a challenge, and I was always up for a challenge, to be thrown anything and to kind of take it and just run with it. And I think because of that, by the time I was, when I really stopped and think about it and look back, I was very young in big positions. So I had been headhunted, and I was appointed at the age of 25 to be the head of marketing for a startup in the financial management consulting space called Parson. And then I was also at the same time, they said, well, we want you actually to manage both brands. So it was Parson and its sister company, Proudfoot Consulting. And I remember being 25 and having a corner office, which sounds crazy. I know, it sounds absolutely crazy when I really stop and think about it. But I was in a very male, I've always been in very male dominated industries. So I guess moving from Covance into consulting, management consulting, it's a pretty tough industry. It's a pretty hardcore industry. Very, as I said, male dominated. Most, where I in that particular company I was at, most people I'd say were in their 50s or so. They say grey hair is a great thing because in the consulting game, you know, it does demonstrate industry experience and expertise to the clients that we're working with. I was this young female coming in and not disrupting, but just a bit of different energy, I guess, into a very staid kind of male dominated industry. And that was my last position within Proudfoot Consulting before I started my own business.
And that was in 2008, right?
Yeah, it was 2008. There is a story behind why I started my own business, which I don't know if that's what you're going to ask me.
Yeah, next. I was going to. Well, look, you're on the record as saying that it was a decision that was motivated by your family. So I'd love to hear, you know, how much that played into it and what else was driving you when you decided to strike out on your own.
Well, it's a bit of a bittersweet story in that it was probably one of an early experiences or exposures to a bit of adversity and discrimination. So when I became a mother, I've done things fairly early in life in that I was at a point in my corporate career, young, but very much on an upward trajectory. When I fell pregnant with Charlotte, who you will hear about as we go forward, it was like I was an alien all of a sudden overnight in the company that I was working with. It was like I had just grown another head, and it was as if my career was going to be ruined. The reaction I got from so many people was like, "Ah, Gemma, you know, you're onto this great career, and now you're having a baby." It was, you know, so I was 27 when I had Charlotte, and I did have a very supportive boss at the time. However, unfortunately, in the early stages of my maternity leave, he had left the organisation. So the person that came in after him, not very supportive at all of mothers, working mothers. And it was a real shock to me because I had worked, I had won awards in this role. I had shown that I was very capable in my role. Even when I had Charlotte, I was still kind of doing work from home within 6 weeks of that. I did some of our most successful work when I had Charlotte as a newborn baby. So I was still kind of keeping on top of everything. So they kind of made it very difficult for me to stay. And I was never going to sacrifice being a new mother to working in a corporate environment from 8 to 8 type thing. Like I was very clear that I wanted to manage my career and be, you know, I still have a brain. I still know my job. I could still do it faster, probably be more efficient. But I wasn't going to put my baby in childcare for those hours. So I needed a balance, and that's kind of what was promised to me. But when it kind of came to, okay, well, you've got to do these hours or you're not here at all. I decided I'm not going to be there. So I was, again, an opportunity came up where actually it was my former boss who had left and heard what had happened and said, Gemma, come and consult to my business. And that was my first springboard client with Manny & Co. And yeah, so Charlotte was probably then she was probably about 12 months old by the time I kind of got started with consulting. People often ask me about the business name Manny & Co. And to be honest, I never dreamt that I would be here running an international business when I named the company Manny & Co. At the time, I just needed, you know, I was kind of, the opportunity came up, I had to establish an ABN, get my business name registered. So did all that quite quickly. And I started, you know, with my first office with an assistant with that particular client. So it was, you know, it was a good gig to get. I was having to travel to Brisbane though. So this particular client was in Brisbane. So again, I was still having to leave my baby, Charlotte, for a couple of days and do the commute. So it was, still wasn't like it was a walk in the park. It was still, you know, sacrificing this to be able to juggle. But at the same time, it was, I've never looked back. I've often wanted to throw in the towel with my own business because it's been a 10-year journey of a lot of, as I said, it's not a walk in the park. Anybody that thinks going into your own business is going to be easy, absolutely. It's got rose-colored glasses on, you know, but I, at the same time, I've never looked back, and I'm loving, at the end of the day, I love what I'm achieving, what I'm doing.
Tell me a little bit about what the early days of Manning & Co. were like. So you know, you've explained to us how that happened with your springboard client and traveling between Sydney and Brisbane. What did a typical day look like for you at that time? And how did you find that experience, which a lot of people listening might have had or might have in the future if they start their own thing, of actually stepping out of the corporate world where everything is done for you, all the supporting functions are done, and into the startup world where suddenly you're doing everything?
Yeah, it was a shock to the system initially, definitely for the fact that, yeah, I had to do everything. I had to do my become an accountant overnight almost, or at least understanding, you know, bookkeeping. And I had an assistant that started with me, so immediately I had an employee. I worked, you know, I went into this going, I needed more flexibility to be the present mother that I wanted to be and still strive to be, but yet have this career. But there was, I think I've never worked as hard before in my life, because I'm juggling a baby, but also trying to start a business and service a client. So the time that I had off with Charlotte to be, you know, present with her, I had to make up other. So I found myself working weekends, working very long nights, into the evenings. So there was no switch off from the very beginning. Whereas in corporate land, you know, even in a high powered kind of position, yes, it occupies your mind when you go home, but I find that there was a switch off button. I could have my 4 weeks annual leave, go on holiday and know that, okay, you know, at least I've got this week, no disruptions. When I think, you know, when you, especially in those early days, yeah, I couldn't leave. Yeah, I mean, I could leave the business to a point, but it was still, the work had to be done. Again, if I was off with Charlotte for a day, or she was sick or something happened, I had to make up those hours. So I would work to, like, I still do work kind of crazy hours, you know, sometimes you work until midnight, 1 a.m. Whenever you can fit the working hours in, knowing that when you do have your time off with your children, that's time at some point that needs to be made up. So I remember when I fell pregnant with my second daughter, Amelie, I had just decided that where I was, my office was in a photography studio in Balmain, and it was fine for the time that Manny & Co. had its first year or thereabouts, but my clientele were, you know, fairly professional businesses in corporates as well. So I determined that environment wasn't suitable anymore, so I had to go and get my own office space. And that was, I remember, you know, my taking on my first lease, it was quite a risk, quite a responsibility. And I just found out that I was having my second baby. So I remember signing the lease for my office in Balmain, which the Sydney office is still in that office today. So it's still got a lot of importance, I guess, the Mannion Co Sydney office. A lot of memories there. But I remember signing that with the news that I was expecting Emily, and Emily's just turned 8. So that's kind of how long ago that was. But having then my second in amongst the chaos, because at that point Mannion Co was growing. So we were, word was getting out there. I had a very good network from my corporate days, so people were like, you know, Gemma's out on her own now. A lot of my work was and it still is a lot of word of mouth and referrals and through the network that I, you know, I've built and nurture and care for. So the work was kind of just coming our way, and I was kind of growing the business, then having Amelie, my second, and kind of that was a different experience again, having her, but having the business at the point it was, because there were even more demands on me when she came on the scene. So I actually was emailing a client, I kid you not, when I was going into labor with Emily. So that's, and there's photos and things of me of having her under the desk, and then Charlotte there. And, you know, the girls have always, they are a part of my business life. That's just how it is.
So you got the company up and running whilst having two small children. When did the move into the international space happen, and can you walk me through how that came about?
So it came about in 2012, and the girls, it's interesting because when I started Mannion Co, I did miss travel. So, you know, I've spoken to you about my love of travel and, you know, all my corporate jobs always had a travel component because I was part of global marketing team. So even in those jobs, I was traveling in the region, Asia Pacific, but also Europe and the US. So I was really missing the travel. But I knew that the girls had to get to a certain age before I could even dream of travel like that again. But it just happened that one of my very good clients, my early clients, they were expanding themselves internationally. And wherever they went internationally, they took Mannion Co with them. So in 2012, I actually went to South Africa to launch an initiative with one of my clients, and to the UK. And that particular client were also going into Asia. So in 2012, I did my first trip. Well, my second trip, actually, the first time I was to Singapore was in an earlier corporate role. So it had been about 10 years since I'd been to Singapore. So I came to Singapore with my client, and then we launched them into this market. And so my team in Sydney, we did the launch for them up here. We ran a big thought leadership event for them, which was very successful. But I was spending probably I was here every 3 months type thing in the lead up to this big event that we were doing for them. That was when I really started to understand a little bit more about what was happening here in Singapore and then ASEAN. I'm quite a strategic thinker, and so I kind of put a couple of things together. I could join the dots with some things, and that's how I started Gemstar, my second business. So the Mannion Co business, we were here doing business in 2012. And then Gemstar, the idea for Gemstar came out of a couple of things that I saw at that time. And so I established the second venture, Gemstar, in 2012, although it wasn't incorporated until a little bit later. And we weren't officially set up in Singapore until 2015.
And what does Gemstar do? Tell us a bit about that.
So I might talk about what I was seeing in a little bit more detail, and then you can kind of see where Gemstar comes to be. So I was trying to solve a problem, I guess, with Gemstar, and that problem was that I had a lot of tech companies coming to Mannion Co. One of our strong verticals is IT and technology. So a lot of tech startups were coming to Mannion Co for our go-to-market strategy advice, as well as to tap into our corporate networks as a way to accelerate their own business growth. But they were struggling with funding at the time. So again, this was quite a few years ago, but the funding scene in Australia was pretty dire, very hard for early stage startups to get anything. And I think it's still kind of that very similar now. However, and it wasn't such a scene back then. It is obviously the startup and innovation and tech scene now has really matured a little bit more in Australia, but back then it was still very early days. But these companies were struggling with attracting funding and getting funding. And I saw a lot saying, Gemma, we're off to Silicon Valley. So I saw a brain drain happening from Australia for these companies going to Silicon Valley. spending a lot of time here in Singapore, I saw that Singapore's got a very strong innovation and entrepreneurial kind of culture here, an agenda that they were really promoting as a smart nation vision. A lot of funding up here. There is more funding available for startups if you know where to tap into. So my view was that, well, if I don't want to see Australian talent and good companies going offshore, but if we can tap into our regional, you know, next door neighbours and kind of look at the untapped market potential and look at growth opportunities, I felt that we could grow homegrown Australian businesses still in Australia, but tapping into the regional opportunities that exist and know that in Australia, we're in a strategic position to really take advantage of this region that now I'm proudly call home. But it is amazing here and not enough businesses are tapping into it. And we can maybe talk about that later. But Gemstar basically wanted a different kind of feel to Manny & Co. So Gemstar had a strong call to mission, which is to help, well, to send a message to Australian businesses to prioritise Southeast Asia in their growth plans. And Gemstar will be the market access partner and the partner to help really launch Australian businesses into the region. We have a very strong entrepreneurial and innovation offering with the series of programs under Gemstar, but we do, the two businesses, Manny & Co and Gemstar, are interrelated in a way in that we have built off now the 10-year business of Manny & Co and all the methodologies that we've created within the Manny & Co business to produce a marketing-led approach to commercialization for Australian startups and innovators under the Gemstar banner. So we do work quite closely with two organisations.
Okay, so Manning & Co, then Gemstar, and then last year you kind of took things to the next level and you moved the family to Singapore.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to do that, and what was it like? Because when we were talking off air a few weeks ago, we talked about some of the crazy stuff that had happened around things like banking and also schooling.
Yeah. It's been a very hard decision and a couple of reasons why, but I guess I got to the point where I had to move for the business. For the Gemstar offering, I'm sitting in our Innovation Centre of Excellence. So I did take a bit of a risk rather than just setting up a Manny & Co or Gemstar office, like a desk in a shared space or a serviced office. I've actually got a fairly sizable space here in our own right that's our own landing pad for Australian clients coming in. Taking the risk of, you know, opening up a centre like this, I felt that as the driving force of the business and the founder and CEO, I had to show my commitment to the region and to the business here by physically being here. There is a thing in Southeast, well, especially in Singapore, I think now there's only so long you can fly in and fly out. And I guess I'd been flying in, flying out for 4 or 5 years. My Australian business is far more established. So I felt that it was time for me to give my love and attention and my more of my time to the Singapore venture and to our opportunities up here in Southeast Asia. It was hard because it took me about a year actually to make the move. So my move was delayed for a year, and that's because of me being a mother with two young children. Well, they're not so young anymore. However, schooling is quite an issue. So up here, you've got international schools. Mainly you can't really get into the local school system as an expat unless you're a PR, which is a permanent resident, which is quite hard now to get that visa status. So because I'm doing this on my own, I don't have the big, if I was an expat or if I was a trailing spouse or if I was here with my husband or he from being employed by a corporate, international school fees are usually covered in your salary package. I didn't have that luxury, to be honest, although I've been in business for 10 years. I think, to be honest, a lot of people think, oh, she's a businesswoman running her own business, must be doing well. Hello. And it's like, well, look at, you know, it's one of those myths that need to, you know, that need to be addressed, because everything I make, I do put back into my business. I'm still at that phase of international growth with doing that on my own without investors and partners. It's all been organic. So I put a lot of what I make, I put everything back into the business. So I didn't have the money, to be honest, to send my children to the top international schools here, which cost an absolute bomb. It's crazy. It's makes it quite hard to access. So education for me, I mean, I was really in a pickle. It's like, I need to be in Singapore for my business, but I have two children to put through school and I can't do the international schools. So I decided to do distance education for my girls for the first 9 months of last year, which I can't tell you how many meltdowns I had last year. So moving one country to, trying to settle on so many different fronts, and then trying to manage their education for all of last year through distance. It did take its toll on me. I was tearing my hair out, the pressure, worrying about, oh my gosh, are my children going to get behind because we're not, we don't have this project in on time or there's this. So my long working days became even longer, where at night times I would have to check all, and it wasn't just even one child, it's two lots of different, projects and assignments, and it was mental. It was absolutely crazy. This year I have found a alternative solution. So they are in what's called a no frills international school here, which an entrepreneur, funnily enough, started to fill to address this problem in Singapore. So this is a South African entrepreneur who runs his own business here. But so I think that there are people here in a similar kind of situation, but I've not come across one female who's done it and had to bring children. I'm yet to find that my soul sister up here. Hopefully I will.
That is absolutely huge stuff. Like, I run my company, I have a small child, but I'm not sure how I would go if I had to move, for example, to Dubai or New York and take my son with me and do it by myself and keep the business running. So I think that is incredibly impressive.
Thank you. It has been a bit of a whirlwind, to be honest, the last year. It's coming up to a year that I've lived here. My girl's dad still lives in Sydney, is in Australia, so that was the other complications that we've had to work around, making sure everybody's connected and all of that. And there's also a lot of travel. What's come with me moving here is making sure that my Australian business, I think some people do take their eye off the ball with growth into international markets. And I've been very mindful that I love my Australian business. I love my Australian clients. I'm more in love with my Australian business probably than ever. And I need, sometimes, distance makes the heart grow fonder. I'm very proud of the Australian business and the team because they've really stepped up and they're absolutely on board with me and the vision. And they have been remarkable. And I've shown my clients the commitment by traveling back very regularly to make sure I have FaceTime with my clients, to make sure I've got FaceTime with my staff, FaceTime with family too. But it's, I think last year I did travel probably, I over-traveled almost the other way back from here, despite making this my base, just so that I was kind of mitigating any risk, anything that might fall out from me moving here. So I'm happy to say that now that's all paid off, in that the clients, they know that I've got a great team, that I'm still here, I'm on the phone with them. It's not like I've deserted them. I do go and see them for strategy meetings or for anything that's important to them. I'm absolutely committed.
And I wanted to switch gears a little bit now and talk about your experience of, I guess, traveling this path and experiencing this fairly incredible journey into the land of international business that you had, from the perspective of somebody who's done it as a woman. Because, as you know, we are airing this interview as part of our Girls Go Global campaign that we are running throughout the month of March. And so I'd love to hear from you, whether you think that being a woman has had an impact on your international expansion, and whether you think it's been harder for you to actually grow your two companies and take Gemstar into Singapore than it would have been had you been a man.
Yeah, it's an area that I'm very passionate about, that I do speak about quite a lot, and write about it a lot. I definitely think it's been harder. And there are many things that have happened along the way, examples I could give you and share with you, but I definitely think it might not have taken me 10 years if I was a man. I think where I see, there's a couple of great men I'm connected to up here who have been in business the same amount of time, 10 years. Mm. And I see you know, I'm not, I mean, I'm very proud of what I've achieved and where I'm at, but I know what they've achieved during that time coming into an international setting. And I hope that I can kind of continue on the journey now and really keep escalating and accelerating the growth. But I do think it's not been easy. I've had many times where I think people in the business world, especially businessmen, will underestimate maybe me being a female. I'm fairly petite and I'm known as the pocket rocket in that I punch above my weight. But I do think there's this, oh, she's a cute little businesswoman thrown at me quite a lot. So, I mean, we do a lot of events for Gemstar. We host companies coming into the region, and it's really interesting sometimes, well, quite regularly, how I'm mistaken to be the PR event manager at our events. And people will come up to me, and especially if I've got male colleagues with me, assume that my male colleagues must be the CEO and founder of Gemstar. So when I'm introduced as the founder and CEO, I can't tell you how many people just almost fall off their chair or kind of go, oh, we thought she was the event manager.
I can totally relate to that experience.
It makes my blood boil. But I even have, you know, I've had, I think more recently, unfortunately, you know, I was thinking to myself, okay, maybe I think about it too much about how the difficult journey it's been on that I have been on being a mother of two children, being a woman. Mm. But even very more recently, a couple of things happened to me, which I probably can't disclose all the details because I shouldn't make it public just at the moment, but I will get my point across at some point in time when I can.
Yeah.
But I definitely, in a business negotiation, was totally underestimated. I think somebody was trying to steamroll me in this negotiation. Probably thinking, you know, oh, Gemma's a, you know, she's, I don't know how she's, I mean, she's there in Singapore. She must be doing something right. But hopefully she'll be so keen to get into this arrangement that she won't look into the detail. She probably won't, you know, do the due diligence. And I think when I stood my ground on what I felt were the fair terms of this, they obviously, you know, weren't expecting for me to stand my ground around this particular issue. And that's a clear example when I look at how I was treated during that, somebody trying to appease to me, being the mother and trying to connect with me and my children and, you know, trying to do all that to kind of get a business arrangement that would suit them more than me. Yet me putting my foot down with what I, you know, had to stand up for.
Yeah.
I think it was another very recent example of, God, oh my gosh, like this has happened. Like people are trying to push me around or stay around, like probably thinking, oh, she's so nice, Gemma. You know, she's a lovely businesswoman. She's so friendly and nurturing. She's got a goal, you know, and I do. I have a very big heart, and this is one of the things I've struggled with. I am a very nurturing person. I'm a very caring person. I have a big heart. I treat my clients like family. I treat my staff like family. And then you go where people do take advantage of that, though, in business. And I have to, it's this balancing of wanting to be myself and not be too cold and clinical and not being myself in business, because I think what I bring is a good leadership quality. And I know Jack Ma talks about the love quotient in his business success and leading with the heart, you know, and bringing that into business. But I've also been exposed to the dirty end of things where that can be taken over.
How do you balance that up? You know, how do you balance your instinct to sort of care for people and be generous with them against making sure you protect yourself when people are out to give you a raw deal?
Well, it's something I'm working through. You know, I think I'm actually going to write a blog post myself in the coming weeks around collaboration, or is it deadly competition? Because I feel, it's up here. Actually, what I've probably been exposed to since growing the business up here, I do feel like I'm in a different era of the business. It's cutthroat. Many smiling tigers I referred to a lot of people around, people who want to get close to you, want to learn everything you're doing, pick your brain, and then package up what you're doing and put it on. Like I've just had so many examples over the last year. That's why I'm a fairly resilient, strong-willed determined individual, but I've had to really, really, really dig deep in amongst the craziness of trying to get my girls settled and trying to do the school and sort out and make sure they're happy, trying to deal with another level of business up here and the dirty tactics that go on. I mean, it's just, I've been amazed, like after 10 years of being in business, seeing some of the stuff I've seen in the last year with people like trusted partners, or again, these people who, I don't know, it's just, it's unfortunately, it's soured things a little bit for me, and it's made me kind of, again, I feel like I have to watch my back quite a lot.
Yeah. So that's kind of a segue into what I was going to ask you about next. We all make some stuff ups when we run businesses, particularly when we take them international. Yes. You've done some amazing stuff. I'm sure you've probably made a couple of errors along the way as well. And I was wondering whether you could just share with our audience, you know, what's one of the key mistakes that you made as you expanded internationally that looking back, you think, oh, wish I had managed to not do that?
Well, I think it's hard because I was going to say, I think my example of going into partnerships, you've got to get that right. So I've managed to dodge some bullets along the way, yeah. I think. But I've dodged them, but at the same time, they have opened up my eyes to how careful you have to be. Yes. When you select who to work with in an international market. And again, you've got a lot of people. So me coming into this part of the world, I had a lot of people going, we just want what she has. So we want to take her business because we know she's doing the legwork in Australia and she's bringing these companies into the region. We want to push our consulting services and we're going to try to pretend that we can be some investor or some partner to her clients, but we're trying to, you know, take her out of the equation, for example. It's just, as I said, it's been an eye-opener, and that's why for my clients, and I think why especially our young entrepreneurs feel quite safe with us, I want them to feel safe because we try to protect them. We try to teach them about what things to look out for, but I'm also trying to guide companies to avoid the sharks out there. And I think in international markets, especially, they do think of you as a foreigner and they can take advantage of you even more so. So I do think that to be really careful about who you decide to work with and doing your due diligence and having that trusted partner is absolutely key. As I said, I've had a few, near misses, but I guess I live to tell the tale, but I am more mindful of that going forward.
That's some great advice. Gemma, you've successfully grown and expanded two businesses over the last 10 years. Success leaves clues. I would love it if you could share with us some of the habits that you've followed that have helped you create that success. So, for example, what does a typical day in the life of Gemma Manning look like?
Every day is quite different and quite crazy, really. What does it look like? I do check. I'm terrible. I know they say you shouldn't, but I do check my emails pretty much the moment I wake up to see what's come in overnight in Australia. So time different. Now that I'm here in Singapore, there is a time difference factor. And I know my team usually need me as soon as I'm online. So there's an element of nothing more that can wake me up quickly than looking at my emails in the morning and going, okay, that's what's on for the day. So I do a bit of that. I love to take my girls to school now that they're in school. And that's a little bit of downtime for me. Now I make my way to the office. It's funny, my girls actually made a playlist for me of motivational music to listen to. So I have my playlist that I listen to because here you don't have cars. So actually you've got to public transport it around, which is fine. And then I get to listen to my music and pump myself up. I find that actually puts me in a good headspace to be a bit more motivated of the challenges or what awaits. I usually talk to my staff as soon as I get into the office. We touch base. Skype is very important for us now communicating. We've always got to be in touch with each other because now the business is basically where a team across the region. We're in so many different locations, even in Australia. We're in Brisbane, Perth, Sydney. In the region, we're in Vietnam, Singapore, and expanding as well. So really for us to try to, that's one of been something I've worked really hard on, is trying to create a really good team culture despite us all being kind of geographically dispersed. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of communication between us all during out the day. I try to be as organized as I can. I am very big, even internally, for everyone taking notes. I'm very much into everyone having a taking note culture, having a to-do list. I do my to-do lists or visualize what I'm going to do the night before, usually before the day begins. So being organized as a busy mum, I'm sure as you know, Cynthia, it's all about preparation and being organized. So, I mean, I have to think about my girls and what they've got on. So I've got to be highly organized. I think it's only being highly organized that I can be successful. Otherwise it would all get too much and on top of me. So I guess they're busy days. I'm often at meetings, doing all sorts of interviews, writing blogs, doing client strategy sessions. I'm still very active with our clients. I have dinner, I really love to have breakfast with my girls, have dinner with my girls, make sure I have quality time with them at the end of the day. But then I usually do get on the computer and I still have to do some work once they go to bed at night. My daughter sent me, she sent me a 3-year goal list herself. She said, "Mummy, maybe after this next year, because you've got so much on, maybe then you can stop working in the evenings." I said, "Yeah, maybe let's work towards that." So I probably have one more year of doing those crazy long days. But every day is exciting. I'm very energized by what I'm doing here in the region, because there's so much for Manny & Co in this next 12 months, so much for Gemstar. We're doing very exciting things. Team's growing regionally. I was so nervous about making the step and taking the leap to come into Singapore and move here. I know this time a year ago I had many sleepless nights and really questioned, oh my gosh, is this the right thing? Am I the worst mother in the world for doing this? What am I doing? Moving my children abroad, everything that comes with that, leaving my business in Australia, I hope, But I'm a year on, things are thriving. My girls are thriving. They love it here. The international experience they're getting here, it makes me happy every day to see them so happy and thriving. My business is thriving and I think I'm thriving as well.
That is super inspiring stuff. So I'm wondering, what is next for you then? Like, where to from here?
Well, there is a third venture. I kid you not. my third venture is, so basically I guess what's next is Manny & Co. to just on that. We are becoming firmly a regional strategic marketing company with a lot of opportunities up here to grow across anywhere from Japan. Interestingly, Japan's back on my radar with opportunities for me to go into Japan through to India. So the Manny & Co. business will continue becoming fully regional with a growing team. Gemstar, we're going into Australia. We've kind of come out of Australia and we're opening up centres in Australia. So Perth is opening up and we've got lots going on for Gemstar in Australia and in other countries across the region. But Light Years is my third venture. And that is, I think, where after Light Years, I will feel like I've achieved my main business goals, at least at this point in time in my life. Light Years is my social impact venture that I actually went to Tenneco Island to pitch to Richard Branson. And I did that about a year and a half ago.
Wow.
So people call me crazy, but Light Years is definitely a project that I've kind of already started making some progress towards Light Years. But basically Light Years is to help young disadvantaged women globally to become self-independent women with an education and with a clear pathway into a career. And that would be provided by Light Years, which would be an extension of both Manny & Co. and Gemstar, with some hubs where we employ women in technology and we employ women in the creative marketing space. And the idea is that we get corporates to get on board and give those businesses work to keep these women employed, but we will take them through a full program teaching them life skills. For me, I've had a bit of a difficult path in a way at times with what I've been, what I've experienced firsthand being a woman, and I've been well educated, and so I've been very fortunate to have an education. I've still had many challenges thrown my way, and I just want to level playing fields in the future. I don't want things to be necessarily easier for women than they should be. I just want equality and a level playing field. So I try to achieve that myself. I'm trying to pave the way for my young girls to be inspired, hopefully, by what I'm doing, but also for them to have a different path that's far more equal. But also for women who can't even have can't get an education and are not in education, employment or training, they're the women that I'm really keen to give a good start to and to mentor them and guide them. And that's what I pitched. As I said, when I spent a week with Richard Branson on Necker Island, and I'm quite close to getting that project to a point where I can self-launch it.
Amazing. Gemma, if people are interested in finding out more about what you do, whether that is Manning & Co, Gemstar or Light Years, how can they get in touch with you?
Through LinkedIn, or I'm happy if you want to give my email details.
You can choose whichever you like. If you put your email, then you risk the like deadly deluge of emails that may follow. That is entirely up to you if you're okay. But maybe your LinkedIn profile is just Gemma Manning.
Yes. Yeah. Just Gemma Manning. Yep. So through LinkedIn, that's fine. Or you can, that's probably the easiest.
Okay. That's fantastic. We're going to have some women. We'll have some men, but I know we're going to have a lot of women listening to the show who are thinking about expanding their business internationally and they haven't actually done it yet. What are your kind of final thoughts for those women? What's your message to them?
I think, it can be scary at the time to think beyond what it might be your comfort zone. So for me, if you just think I was in Balmain in my Sydney office, had my Manny & Co business going very nicely, I was in my comfort, I was in my little bubble there, and it's been very scary at the time. It was scary to push outside my comfort zone and push the boundaries to come here, but I know it's the best thing I've ever done. And sometimes I think just overall in business, you need to push yourself out of your comfort zone to really be able to see you fully take flight and to fly. And I do feel like the business is flying, and my test was really for me. I mean, I was very scared of this move, to be absolutely brutally honest. It was a very scary decision. So there's an element, I think, of believing in yourself, more on a practical level, of course, just making sure that you do your due diligence and work with the company, Cynthia, such as your company and others out there who can help by making sure you do the due diligence and make sure there is something there in an international market that makes sense and that there's an actual market there. Even though throughout even my Young Gems program, which is the Young Entrepreneurs program, we go through a lot of the discipline around market landscapes and, all of that stuff. I'm a strong believer for all of that and being ready, but I also know you sometimes need to take a punt, a measured punt, but you can't plan everything. And yes, I'm all big for planning, so please don't take it away. I love planning, but I know that what I'm experiencing with my Manny & Co business, I didn't know those opportunities existed, and market research wouldn't have told me either. It's me being physically here, to be honest, that's taking Manny & Co. Manny & Co might be, within a year, our business here might be stronger than the Australian business. And that's me being here, being also respected for my decision by companies around. I think that doing this does kind of, you get street cred in a way. I think people do start to take you even that little bit more seriously. So I think it's, sometimes you've got to take the punt. I think I did. That was measured, but I also had to believe in what I was doing and show enough determination and dedication to carry through on what I set out to achieve. And I mean, that can be applied across so many areas in business, but I guess from an international expansion side of things, you've got to be committed. I do also see a lot of companies that will come and go and they expect a business deal after three meetings, and it's just it doesn't happen like that. So you have to be pretty realistic that, it's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of hard work. It's kind of like starting a second, I felt like startup mode again. But I can, if you've got some good people around you, you keep believing yourself, backing yourself, and got that inner strength and that resilience, I think then beautiful things can happen with expanding a business internationally.
Gemma, it has been so fantastic to have you on the show today. And I am, as I said before, I'm so impressed by what you've achieved. I'm really looking forward to seeing what you do next and to, you know, having you back here on the show sometime to tell us where you've got to.
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me, Cynthia. I really enjoyed our chat. I really did.